Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy. Recording is 12:54 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 19th. I thought we'd kick off today with Apple. It was up about $4, but I think the more important point is that following the negative earnings announcement and the strong perception that there is going to be a strong negative impact on the global economy from the coronavirus in the first quarter, that the share has barely moved. And when we look at it over the course of the last 2 months, it's pulled back, or the extent of the range has been approximately $30. And the pullback we had in July-August was also about $30. We haven't had a reaction of more than that since at least May. And the bigger question that I think investors need to tackle is, how much profit erosion have people who are long of Apple experience? The answer is none. The price is within a couple of dollars of the all-time peak. So then we can think about, where are people probably putting stops? Well, generally speaking, the most likely place for a stop is under the most recent low, which is around the 300 mark. So I think we can anticipate that there are plenty of stops at around the $295 to $300 area. But one of the most important things that's happening in here right now is the very dynamic move that we had today in the yen. So the yen is now breaking down against the US dollar. And this was a very dynamic move. We haven't had a move of this size in the yen against the dollar in really quite some time. Anything that's even remotely comparable is that move we had in January. And the more important point here is that the dollar is breaking on the upside. If we go back and look at the peak for the dollar back in 2015, there has been a very clear sequence of lower rally highs, lower major rally highs. There's also been a sequence of higher reaction lows. And I think it's not an exaggeration to say that we have a bit of a triangular pattern evolving over the course of the last few years. There has been this argument about, well, are we going to see continued dollar strength or yen strength? And I think we're increasingly coming to an answer to that particular conundrum. The Japanese economy is already hurting from an additional hike to consumption taxes. The Japanese government believe that they have to do that in order to have even a remote semblance of trying to balance the budget. But the bigger picture here is that they've done it at exactly the wrong time, because Japan is also really heavily exposed to the Chinese economy, and China is engaged in a rather difficult environment right now. So that is putting downward pressure on the yen, not so much because of portfolio flows, but because of clear fundamental reasons why Japan needs a weaker currency. But of course, Japan is a major carry trade currency. And when we look at the move that we've seen in terms of the breakdown in the yen and the significant weakness we've had in the euro over the course of the last 6 weeks, I think it's easy to highlight here that we have a short-term oversold condition, but it is a significant resumption of the medium-term downtrend for the euro. Despite the fact we have the short-term oversold condition, the profitability of carry trades right now in currencies where there is no yield is really quite pronounced. So when we look at, for example, the fact that the NASDAQ has broken on the upside and is being led higher by some of the most speculative of companies, then that, I think, is representative of the clear conclusion among investors that the only game in town is liquidity. Tesla is up from $200 to $913 over the course of perhaps 5 months. Now, it's a big question whether it's going to be able to sustain a move above $1,000. But what I find particularly interesting is that when we look at the options market and start to look at, for example, Anything with a strike somewhere around the $2,000 mark. The highest one that I can see is $1,880. And that's going only out to February of 2020. But if we go for somewhat longer maturities, then you get an active market. And there is clearly some evidence of buying with rather significant premiums. And these are going to continue to rise with more liquidity. So these, I think, are more important points here, that it's not just Tesla that is going parabolic here. If we go to get a great deal of interest from investors, this is, I think, one of the reasons why we've had the acceleration in a company like Microsoft, because the cyclicality of its cash flows have been ironed out, and it is one of the primary beneficiaries of the adoption of the subscription business model. The share is up from 15 to 187 in the space of the last 6.5 years, so that's really quite impressive. But when, for example, we look at Virgin Galactic, I mean, this is a company that is probably a long way from turning a profit. And the share is really going vertical. It's gone from about 7 to 35 in the space of the last 6 weeks. And then the price is continuing to rise here at a parabolic rate. Then when we think about some of the hydrogen companies, then what we're seeing here also is a very pronounced move on the upside. So these are really quite incredible trends. And what the common characteristic across all of them, whether we are looking at Tesla or Virgin Galactic or hydrogen shares or the solar ETF, or the wind ETF, then this is obviously a big bull market, and these are starting to really perform here because they're attracting adherents, not only because of the increasing political support for a green New Deal or a green rush or a green bubble or a grubble, as some people are saying, but also because they're highly speculative in nature. There is an increasing perspective that batteries will become competitive with internal combustion engines by about 2023. There was a tendency to dismiss these kinds of forecasts for most of the last few years on the simple fact of the matter that it was an estimate and that the numbers of electric vehicles being sold were minuscule compared to internal combustion engines, and that caused people to doubt whether it was going to become reality. But today what we're starting to see is two important characteristics have fallen into place. The first is the widespread reporting of climate disasters, whether that is floods or massive storms, swarms of locusts, massive fires, all of these types of, or people wearing t-shirts in Antarctica. These are all the kinds of stories that are animating it's the zeitgeist of our age. It's all happening at a time of incredibly low interest rates. So that is creating interest in highly speculative ventures. The flip side of negative interest rates, and we have negative deposit rates across a good slug of the developed world. Then we have negative yielding bonds, which have a total of $13.3 trillion. And it looks like a bullish consolidation with further to go on the upside. And then we have the fact that you've got negative deposit rates. Well, what this is doing is creating at the demand for highly speculative enterprises, and the willingness to follow the zeitgeist and to really engage in actively supporting the evolution of a Green New Deal is something that is driving these prices higher. So this is one of the most important developments that we have right now. But at the same time, oil prices have rallied for, I think, 8 days in a row now, and we're up an additional $1.3 in here today. It's rapidly unwinding the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. The most important point, though, is that we had an upside weekly key reversal last week, and we're seeing follow-through on the upside in here this week. It's confirming a low in the region of the lows from back in December of 2018, and it does suggest that we're in a big range between about $50 and $75, and rallying from the lower side of that range. Then I think it's important to also keep an eye on the copper price, and copper was also in positive territory in here today. It is now testing the region of the trend mean. It has bounced from the $2.50 area. Now the big question is whether it is going to continue to hold that move. The A-share index in China was a little weaker in here today. The renminbi has been set weaker than 7, although it did close marginally stronger than that level. But I thought it was rather interesting that some of the more speculative technology-based investments in China, like the ChinaX index, are on a very clear recovery trajectory. It has very clearly broken the sequence of lower rally highs from the peak in 2015, and this does look like a new bull market. The big It isn't simply that the yen and the euro are declining, which is creating appetite for carry trades, but China is expected to engage in a massive stimulus. When companies are saying that they can't meet payroll, then that represents a loss of income for literally hundreds of millions of people. And the last thing the Chinese government wants is a recession. There have been some rather, I think, back of the handkerchief calculations about how much of a hit to growth the coronavirus is going to represent. Some people said it might be 2%, some could be 3%, but the majority are still thinking that China will be able to sustain growth around 4%. What happens if they can't? What if we don't get a V-shaped recovery, but rather a U-shaped recovery? That is not being, I think, assessed by markets at all because of the range of stimulative measures that have already been promised and are in the process of being implemented. And this is a global phenomenon. So when, for example, we look at the Brazilian market, it is still right in the region of its peaks around the 1.2, or sorry, the 120,000 level on the Bovespa. And so far, this reaction has been smaller than reactions we've seen over the course of the 4-year advance. When we then think about the Brazilian real, it is continuing to trend lower against the US dollar. The commodity producers are some of the countries that are going to be most affected by the drop in demand from China. So the South African rand is right in the region of 15 versus the dollar, and if it can't sustain a move stronger than 14, this is still a dollar-dominated environment. When we then think about the Australian dollar, it is still in a down or holding a downward trajectory. It's definitely paused around the lows seen since August, but there's precious little evidence really that we're going to see more than some steadying here. And of course, this weakness in currencies and the clear speculative environment that is helping to support high valuations on stock markets is creating demand for a classic hedge against the devaluation of fiat currencies. Gold was in positive territory in here today, pushing above $1,600 for the first time in quite a while, reasserting medium-term demand dominance. This is looking like a really quite bit bullish environment overall. We're really not all that far away from the peak set back in 2011, and the momentum is certainly on the gold bull side. But the most important point is that gold does best when it is appreciating in all currencies, and that is certainly the case in here right now. So, when we look at, for example, it versus the Australian dollar, it is pushing on to new high ground. It is taking out its highs against the euro as well, against the yen. It is also breaking out in a dynamic fashion to new highs. What I think is really quite interesting is that the peak against the yen was at around 2 million yen all the way back in 1980. And it is, I think, more likely than not that we are going to go all the way back and at least test that level. I think it is really worth pointing out that the price is a lot better supported on this occasion than it was back in 1979 when the price went truly parabolic. I think it's quite likely that gold is going to be breaking out in yen. And of course, the fact that gold is breaking out in so many currencies, it is important for two reasons. The first is that gold does best when it is appreciating in all currencies because it is a barometer against which the value of other currencies are measured. And the clear demand for stimulus that is being created by the pullback in China is something that is going to put downward pressure on fiat currencies everywhere. So that's one important point. But then there is the additional point that it is making global headlines. It is going to create demand for gold all over the world. And it is those kinds of headlines that are really going to stoke investment in the precious metal sector generally. Palladium prices were in positive territory again in here today, up $123. That's not quite as high as it was intraday. It was well off the peak in here today. As I was pointing out yesterday, the most consistent point about the trend has been the size of the pullbacks, but also the fact that the breakouts have been sustained. We definitely need to see the breakout being sustained. Now, I think it's important to highlight that platinum prices are still quite depressed, but did close back above $1,000 in here today. So that does look like a chart that has got further to go on the upside. And of course, the higher platinum goes, the more palladium will be produced as a byproduct of platinum mining. And the higher the platinum price goes, the greater the incentive will be to increase production. Silver prices are up 25 cents. They've been ranging below $20 since 2014, and I think it is more likely than not that we're going to see a run back up towards the upper side of that range. And these are, I think, some of the more important points here, that the precious metals sector is comparatively depressed relative to the extraordinary valuations that we have on some of the biggest shares in the world. So this is, I think, one of the more important points. And when you look at gold shares and you have a very clear base formation over the last 7 years, and that it hasn't been able to sustain a move above $30 in all that time, and we are now at $29.73. Well, we are potentially 1 week away from an explosive breakout. And I think this is something that is worth highlighting because there is the real potential here that we're going to create demand for gold as a hedge against some of the speculative excesses that are evolving. The speculative excesses that are evolving are very much in line with a bubbly hypothesis. And this is exactly the time in the trend where are in the cycle when we can anticipate bubbles inflating. We have had an inverted yield curve, and generally speaking, the stock market rallies impressively after the initial inversion. So the inversion was in August. So if we simply look at the S&P and we look at the performance since August, I think it was around August 24th, then the price has gone up about 18%. In the inversion that occurred in 2006, between then and the peak, we had an advance of 30%. Between the inversion in 1998 and the peak in 2000, we had an advance of 50%. So we've had an impressive advance so far. It is nowhere near approximating the advances that we've seen in some of the other big moves following the initial inversion, but we are definitely seeing parabolic trends evolve, and that is particularly true in some of the semiconductors stocks. So AMD is accelerating in no uncertain terms. Considering that the share pulled back by 50% at the end of 2018, it would have been reasonable to conclude that was the end of it. It then consolidated in the region of the peak and then took off again. And now it is increasingly overextended relative to the trend mean. NVIDIA broke on the upside just today. And this is also a really very impressive advance and an incredibly impressive rebound from the lows around 150 and a doubling in less than 6 months. So it is the semiconductors index is clearly leading on the upside here, and it is one of the clear drivers in terms of performance. What it is also doing is creating this catch-up potential in Europe, and the weakness of the euro is certainly helping to revitalize interest in speculative activity in Europe. The Europe stocks index is pushing through and above this 400 level. It's been ranging below 400 for the last 20 years. So this is an incredibly important breakout in terms of European activity. When we look at the FTSE 250, then it is on the cusp of touching the 22,000 level. This has been an impressive advance over the course of the last decade, and it is already a multiple just about of where the peak was back in 2007. The FTSE 100, on the other hand, has lagged the European indices somewhat because of the strength of the pound. And the pound does continue to stabilize here. It is, I think, also worth highlighting that the UK is one of the only countries that is not actively engaged in quantitative easing right now. The Bank of England's balance sheet has been comparatively stable. That is one of the strongest reasons for why the pound has been reasonably stable. It's also part of the reason why we're starting to see a recovery in UK housing. The comparative devaluation or valuation discount that the UK is trading at relative to just about everywhere else, and the stability of the currency is something that is helping to lend an attractive appeal to UK assets. I think there is increasing evidence that we are in a bubbly environment, that it is going to inflate even further as long as we're seeing carry trades evolve and stimulative measures increase. And this has been a liquidity-fueled bull market for the last decade, and nothing has happened yet to question that conclusion. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.